Aleppo is not blockaded. In the government-controlled part of the city, which might contain 1.5 million people, there is only one road in and one road out, and everything has to go through that road. Now, sometimes the control of the road changes hands, so supplies cannot get in. That is when the situation becomes very difficult. When that happens, usually one side gets back the road in about 5 or 6 days, so it only remains closed for 6 days. But when it's closed for a month, then things become difficult.
And what about the hospital? We heard there were two strikes on hospitals there.
Yes, hospitals are a target, and that is a pity.
Are they deliberately targeted, do you think?
I think so. Hospitals encourage people, the lack of hospitals will encourage people to leave. People stay in Aleppo mainly because they don't really have anywhere to go. The richer people have already left, the people who can get work and housing elsewhere have left. Aleppo used to be a city of 5 million people. Now, I doubt if there are 2 million people left. It was the economic heartland of Syria. All these places have been destroyed. People are without work. Even if you do have a job, which is difficult, your salary won't get you more than through a week's expenses, living expenses. So I would say in Aleppo, everybody needs help. And the Red Cross, Red Crescent, does give out a lot of food, and that's a very good thing.
What can JRS do there, and what are you doing there?
We are in emergency relief services, which isn't quite our niche as JRS. JRS usually works in education and in psychosocial accompaniment. In Aleppo, we first of all have a kitchen in which we prepare hot food for some 8,000 people every day. We do the cooking, then we give the food to associations we are in linked with, who then distribute the food themselves. That is one important thing we're doing. Secondly, we're one of the agencies that give out, distribute food baskets that are given out by the World Food Programme through the Red Cross, Red Crescent. We're responsible for a sector of the city. And we're one of only two Christian organizations doing that work. There are some 35 in all. So it's very, very important for the church to have a presence in this distribution. We have a clinic for, we receive some 2,000, 2,500 people every month. And we see mainly people who have chronic disease. In emergency situations, people with chronic disease are those who are left aside. Nobody takes care of them. And it's very, very stupid nowadays to die because of you had untreated high blood pressure or untreated diabetes.
Because you forget that while they're suffering from the horror of a dreadful war, I mean, you describe people going into a shelter while they're being bombed and then coming back out to live their normal life. This must take a terrible toll on them, just on their ordinary everyday living.
Everything becomes difficult. It's strange. The simplest things take on a whole huge other dimension. But life does continue. For example, one of the activities the Jesuits have in Aleppo is to have a small place where students come to study. We call it study zone. You have a lot of university students in Aleppo. They come, they spend the day, they study, they share, they have coffee. You'd imagine nothing is going on. So this is the sort of contradiction which is extraordinarily striking. You have this difficult situation and you have people trying to live as normally as they can.
And is this the case throughout the rest of Syria? Because I do remember talking to a Jesuit bishop from Syria maybe 2 years ago, and he said that there were parts of Syria where it was like a holiday resort and things were fine. Now, I do think things may have changed since then, have they?
On the coast, yeah. The situation is much, much calmer. There is one city, that's Tartus. The whole department doesn't have any frontier with a conflict zone. So over there, the only thing that is different that you see is the number of checkpoints you have to enter the city. Otherwise, life is completely normal. In Latakia, you did have recently a car bomb that went off, but otherwise there as well, life is more or less as normal. So you do have certain parts of Syria in which you do not really have the feeling that there is a war going on.
And why don't the people from Aleppo go to that city?
They're not allowed to anymore. You have, especially on the coastal areas, you have the refusal of more displaced people coming into those regions. They're already full up. They don't want them. I know an old woman with, well, a reasonably old woman, with two nieces last year who left Aleppo, who tried to enter Tartus. She was refused. She tried to enter Latiyeh. She was refused. And finally, she was allowed into Banias, another smaller area on the coast, after having paid roughly a month's salary. So too many people, they don't want them. They're sent out into the villages. But in the villages, you won't find work, you won't find anything to do.
And so begins a long refugee trek out of Syria, that dangerous, dangerous trek for so many people. What are the GRS doing for those people who have to leave?
So we are present in Lebanon, and you have over a million refugees in Lebanon. I think officially they are 1.2 million. But statistics give the number at 1.5 million. The refugee question in Lebanon is enormous. One in four in Lebanon is a Syrian refugee. Over there, we have our usual core activities. So we're in education and psychosocial accompaniment. We reach out to some 2,500 children and their families.
That's a high statistic in Lebanon. The people who are there, are they accepted and looked after well, or is there any tension?
Oh, there definitely is a tension. First of all, Lebanon is divided in its approach to the Syrian question. The fundamental Sunnites would be with the people fighting against the Assad government. The Shiite community would be much more favorable to the Assad government and fighting to defend the Assad government. And you have these two components present in Syria fighting against each other. So there are already very, very high tensions inside Lebanon because of this conflict. High tensions as well because of the amount of people that have come in. There has always been a very large Syrian workforce in Lebanon. They'd be working in the building industry and in agriculture. So you'd have several hundred thousands. But now they're there with their families, with their children, putting strain on schooling. The Lebanese government has done a lot of effort to get people into schools, but it cannot cope with that number. Also, for the first time, you have Syrians competing with Lebanese for jobs and for the same work. No problem for the construction industry and for agricultural labor, but you have Syrians opening up small shops. And that would be in direct competition with Lebanese, so that would be a major problem. I think they're driving wages down, not the official wages, but the illegal wages. You also have tents and small camps going up, especially in the Bekaa Valley. Lebanon has refused to have large refugee camps, and that is because of the bad negative experience we have had with the Palestinian refugee crisis. We do not want official tents. We do not want the people to stay. But where will they go? And can they go back? Most people would want to go back. But to go back, you need to have, first of all, cessation of hostilities. Then you need peace. Then you need to rebuild the infrastructure. You need to provide jobs, provide schools. And then you can go back.
And I think most people would say, well, bring it on to have to do all that if they could only get peace. It seems so elusive. It seems so intractable. Have you any hope that there is any solution in sight for this war in Syria?
Well, already I think the ceasefire that has been in place is already a good step forward. In Damascus, I was there recently. The last two times I've been in Damascus, I haven't heard the artillery shells either leaving or arriving. That's a good thing. That doesn't mean that there aren't fighting in some areas of the city, but the general ambience is calm. People are out, people can go out on the street. So that's a first step forward. And I think when people realize that you can have peace, I think there will be more efforts to keep on that peace. It's easier for the cannons not to start firing when they've stopped than for them to stop once they are firing. So that's a very good step forward. In the Near East, we're very, very naive in our way of looking at things. We believe that America and Russia can get together and decide for the war to stop and everything to stop and things to start again. We're naive. Will that happen? I have no idea. Do we hope it happens? Yes, we do, definitely. The war is going on and is being funded by states and private individuals who are close to these major powers. And we believe that if there is a political decision, very, very clear, these powers can influence these other regional powers to stop their influence. If you cut off the money and if you cut off the arms, then I think the fighting will stop.